Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, Dr. Ross Green here, coming to you live from the offices of Lives in the Balance here in Portland, Maine. Must be the first Monday of the month because it's time for helping behaviorally challenging students, and this is the last program for this school year. We are going to take a break, as we always do, over the summer and start up again in September. I am joined, at least for now, by Carol Davison out in British Columbia. How are you, Carol?
I am very well. How are you?
I am well. And I think we also have been joined by Tom Ambrose, unless this is Nina. Who do we got?
It's Nina.
Hi, Nina. I'm sorry to have made that mistake.
That's okay.
I think Tom is joining us as well, and I'm not sure about Susan. How are you both?
Great, thank you.
Good. We've got a bunch of email that we need to respond to today, but do either of you have anything you want to start the program with before we jump into the very interesting issues that are raised by and questions that people would like us to answer in the mailbag? Anything going on in your schools that you want us to know about? Anything? Tell us.
Well, I don't know if Susan's going to be coming on, but I know that if she does, she'll be able to talk about this a bit more. But she and the counselor from her former school made a presentation on CPS to our school counselors at a meeting last month. So it sounds like our school district is really looking at spreading awareness and understanding of the process and putting it in the toolkit of all of our school counselors throughout our whole district, which is 100 elementary schools and 20 high schools.
Fabulous.
Oh.
That's great.
Nina, I don't think your school district has 100 schools.
No. That's a lot of schools. No, we have 5 schools.
Wow.
A little different.
Yep.
Absolutely.
We do have 100 total schools in Maine, but not in South Berwick.
No, exactly. A little bit different.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, things do seem to be spreading. We have now been joined by Tom. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. Anything you'd like to tell us about what's going on in your building these days? Any issues you want to raise? We can jump into the mailbag anytime we want to. What's on your mind today?
I didn't catch the first part of the show. Are there other people on right now?
We have Nina and Carol on with us as well.
Oh.
And I don't know if we're getting Susan today or not.
So I had a question for Nina and Carol or for you two, Ross, just for the group, that I have noticed lately that in education there's kind of starting to become a buzz or conversations about, which I'm very happy about balance between academics and social and emotional, and some grave concerns about standardized testing and their impact on teaching and learning. My interest was really piqued this weekend when I learned that Nancy Atwell had won a $1 million prize for her work at the Center for Teaching and Learning in Maine.
Yep.
And then she was interviewed and said, don't go into education. Because of the standardized testing and grade-level benchmarking, and that all the work that she's done is to say that developing children's creativity and curiosity is more important than these standards. And I just want to mention that this ties into collaborative and proactive solutions, because I truly believe that the empathy step is a critical component for creativity to exist in any organization, let alone a school. So if you can feel empathized with by someone else, or you can work in a team and feel like your voice will be heard without being shut down, even if you're not quote right, it gives it opens the door to way bigger things that I won't go into right now that I think about with this model. But just wanted to throw that out there because I think it's an important conversation.
No, I agree with you, Tom. And I mean, I've always felt, to be honest, a little bit smug sitting up here in British Columbia, where we've had standards for personal and social development for years. And, you know, descriptors of attainment, and they are very highly valued right alongside other core academics. We are entering a time in British Columbia of some changes on our political educational frontier, and some people are worried that it's not all for the better. So despite this long history and tradition of developing the whole child, there seems to be a little bit of worry that more standardization, that there might be a different agenda on the horizon. There's been nothing specific, and to be honest, our curriculum still is very it's very emphatic about the importance of developing personal and social skills and identity and competencies right alongside, you know, traditional core academic competencies. But there is a little bit of a niggling worry that perhaps the standardization trend may start to leak in a bit more, so it's kind of a wait and see right now.
No, I agree that I think I've heard, you know, more and have hope about just that importance of the social emotional learning. And I think you know, in our district, we've been recently collaborating with the school board talking about long term planning, and one of the major goals that came from that is student voice, which was just really exciting for me because CPS is all about student voice, and it was not just about social-emotional but academic in every aspect of school. So I'm just really excited and hopeful with that because I think it's the student voice platform is. It's what CPS is and goes through every subject area and every part of, you know, a child's day.
I was kind of thinking, too, about the responsive classroom work and the the idea that, you know, building a sense of community is critical, and it isn't something that just happens during a 20-minute morning meeting, that the philosophy of responsive classroom permeates the entire day, you know, the engaging academics component, the developmental awareness. And I think one term that's been thrown around, too, a lot lately is, Ross, I think you'll appreciate this, it's the difference between data-driven instruction and data informed. So information from data, what a student can do, is important, but I still think that there's a big piece of this work with CPS where we can infuse the problem-solving model into the daily life of kids, even in a small situation, you know. I noticed that you're struggling on this math problem, or I noticed that it took you a while to do this, or I noticed that you were trying really hard, you know, let's look together at how we can figure out what happened with this problem. That's probably the best language, right, because it's all about process and growth. But that's still empathy, right? Like, how are you thinking about this? And then saying, well, I noticed or observed, and then how can we figure it out together? I just want to throw it out there that I still feel like there's a huge piece of this work, because it's our last program, there's a huge piece of this work where it could be used much more frequently on a daily basis if we could get in the habit of it.
Right. And not just saved for the most challenging situations.
Yeah, why
I
isn't
think
it for everybody, right?
Right,
or it is for everybody.
It's an approach instead of a system for just the most challenging, because I absolutely agree. And once you start thinking that way and change your lens, it's, you know, it is how you approach sort of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back to Nani. You kind of get good at what we do, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So if we're solving problems proactively and collaboratively all the time, all day, when you get to a challenging kid, wouldn't it be easier?
Exactly.
To definitely use?
Just and the language and everything that you're practicing and modeling for other children and other staff and other parents and adults. It's just how you becomes just what you do instead of something that you need to kind of switch gears, or you're not switching gears with, okay, this is a challenging child, so I'm going to switch gears here. It's just how you approach children or adults.
You know, what's interesting is you guys are bringing up a question that came up. There's a new Lost and Found group on Facebook for people who are using CPS, and the Lost and Found group is for educators to share things in terms of collaborative and proactive solutions and have a forum for discussions outside of our of this type of conversation. And one of the questions was, how do we find time for the collaborative and proactive, especially the proactive solutions, to be happening? And I think what you're saying right now is that it becomes, at the beginning, when you're first learning the process, it can be a bit like an event. Like, okay, I'm going to have a proactive solution with a conversation with, you know, Christina, and so I need to book a time, and I need someone to cover my class, I need to prepare, and you know, come up with all the questions I'm going to ask and frame my question. And then as you become more skilled, I think, and it does start to permeate just your whole view of people, whether it's students, parents, staff, whoever, it just becomes part of your conversational toolkit for talking to people. And yep. It doesn't need to be such an event, and you don't need to make a specific, you know, I have my CPS block that teachers can sign up for if they need to meet with a student, and I'll cover classes. Like, it just becomes much more organic. But yep. It does take time and skill with the process.
I love that point that, yeah, it kind of, do you think that too, I find that when I'm in, like, the best groove, so to speak, with the day, that kind of certain elements of collaborative and proactive solutions are just happening with who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a teacher bring me a pretty big concern the other day, and of course, you know, I just listened a lot and listened and listened and then kind of summarized and listened some more and then reflected it all back. And I don't know about you, the two of you, but sometimes that's really hard to do when things are really crazy when you're running a school.
Just a little.
Or a classroom, you know?
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
because
so
it does
I think
take
that,
some time, yeah.
Yeah, it does take some time, but it also takes, like, a mental presence, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Not looking over your shoulder or out your window thinking, what's going to come next?
Right.
Yeah, and then yep. The other piece, too, one time I was working with a tough kid, and I was lucky Ross happened to be here, and I'll never forget this lesson. Ross said, I never get frustrated, I get curious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get curious about what makes the situation happen or what's going on for this person, and I think that that's really important because that's where I think Ross gets his creativity and his playfulness about the model. He's able to kind of shut off the rest of his life and just, like, think about the person. And
right.
I do think that that's a skill that you can develop over time. And, Ross, if you'd like to speak to that, I'd love to hear what you have to say because you are very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've done it 10,000 times. And so, and I bring up this analogy sometimes in the same way that football players going from the college to the pros say that the game sped up on them when they get to the pros. And then sometime during their second or third year, they say that the game is starting to slow down for them.
Yep.
CPS has slowed down for me so that I have so many plan Bs under my belt and have listened to so many people's plan Bs and observed so many people's plan Bs that the whole thing is extremely comfortable at this point. And the good news is I know that if we apply certain ingredients and do it pretty well, we're going to get a solution to this that everybody's going to be good with. And that is a confidence that pervades my work every time I'm sitting down with folks to do Plan B. And they might be screaming at each other in the beginning, and it may be a really difficult unsolved problem. That's a lot of different angles to it. And yet 10,000 Plan Bs later, I'm extremely optimistic about the outcome. And that's very calming because I know that if we just flesh out the kids' concerns well enough, flesh out the adults' concerns well enough, and really give thought to whether this is a realistic and mutually satisfactory solution,
right?
We're going to get there.
That's a really important point, isn't it, Ross, that I remember one time you said that it's really hard to know if both people's concerns are truly on the table. So they may think that they're putting the concerns on the table, but they may be conscious of it, that they don't dare to share their concerns, that there's a level of trust or just a lack of self-awareness, which happens to all of us. But I think that that lends itself to this idea that this model of working with people is could be used in a managerial way. It could be used in a greater organization way. I just see so many more avenues for this work to increase productivity and creativity for all people, not just for helping families and kids.
It's such an honest way to work with people, just in general. And you can spend so much time in meetings and things without a child's voice or without another person's, whoever's involved, voice, and you realize you're just making these strategies for things that are just not honest for the child. It just feels like you're trying to think of things that can trick them into doing what you want them to do instead of this very honest approach of working with kids. And I was just saying that to someone today, like, instead of, you know, it's that your concerns are valid too, just as much as the child. So it's not that, it just feels so genuine and such a nice way to approach anyone.
Yep.
So when we get to it, if we can, I actually could use a bit of advice on a student that I'm working with right now. So
go
you finish
it.
Up your point, and then I'll tell you a little bit.
My only point was that I am sometimes unencumbered by time pressure, I'm bending over backwards to set the stage for us to be doing Plan B proactively. And I can't emphasize how important that is, because that gives us the space and the breathing room to really be able to listen to the kid and to really be able to listen to the concerns of the other person, the adult frequently, and to really give thought to solutions. On our last program, the subject was, how come we don't do CPS in every school? And, you know, we all had our reasons. But one of the things I'm bending over backwards to do is carve out the time. And I think that's a crucial prerequisite for people to start getting comfortable in using the model. And it's great, Tom, back to what you started the program with today, that people are talking more about social and emotional learning instead of just the curriculum. Because one of the things that's always nagging at people in schools is, if I do this, am I taking time away from the thing that the legislature and my superintendent are telling me that I must do, and the basis on which my job performance will be judged? It sure would be nice if we could get around to basing some percentage of a classroom's teacher's job performance on how that teacher is doing with the behaviorally challenging ones, because that would justify carving out the time to work on it.
Well, and I think my question, I would kind of flip the question back. Why? How could you not do collaborative and proactive solutions? How could you not work collaboratively or work? I mean, I know how it happens. It happens in top-down mandates. Do this or else. But my point is, at what point would you judge the legislature based on job creation, growth, are we going to fail teachers but not fail the legislature for not paying for schools? I think that the gist of this all is that in order for any of us to get to a solution that's going to help our country, which ultimately education is the only profession that affects every other profession. If you don't have school, you don't have doctors, lawyers, musicians, artists, anybody. That also includes folks who come and pick up the trash. I mean, we need everyone in our society is valuable, and I really truly believe that schools are if we don't have good schools, our society is going to really face some incredible challenges. And so I just wonder sometimes if accountability is important, but people are more important.
Well, my only concern is that if we go with that mentality, we're still going to have trouble keeping up with the Finns, and I'm joking.
Oh, you were joking. I wasn't sure. Well, because the reality is people talk about Finnish education so much in public schools these days that they just don't get down to the fact that when you look at who they educate, it's a really different population.
Well, it's
and
a whole
so it's,
different culture of
yeah,
not just ethnic culture, but just culture of education and culture
right.
of society. Completely
and that's
different.
What I want to see. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carol, let's help you out with your kid.
All right. Well, I know that with this student, I've done some things wrong. So straight up front to anyone listening, I've done a lot of some things wrong with this student. So that's why I'm coming to my network here to see if you can help guide me back onto the right path. So the student just moved into the school in about October. And right away we saw some challenging behaviors, disruptive in the classroom, kind of trying to get a lot of attention from peers in negative ways and things like that. And we've had some good discussions with the parents, and there's a lot of stuff going on in that domain as well. So what's going on with me here? I'm asking the teacher to sit down with me and do an LSAP, but I know that a couple of weeks ago, he just was on a vacation, actually, and he just came back. And our last interaction before he left, he pushed my buttons pretty good. He's a good button pusher. And I lost my cool with him. And so I feel like I need some advice on how to go about resetting, repairing. I didn't have a super strong relationship with him before. It was tenuous, I guess you would say. Like, I was attempting to interact with him in a lot of non-confrontational ways just on a daily basis, just to let him know that, I see him as a person and not just a problem. But things left off pretty ugly, and he's going to be coming back in about a week. And, we are going to be doing some hopefully proactive conversations. Just some advice on how do you go about kind of resetting things when it's gone wrong, when it's gone bad.
Did you get frustrated with him?
Yeah, Tom, you could say I got a little frustrated with him.
Yeah. So I think it's always important. Damage assessment, right? Like, how hard was it? Because, and just remember, you're human. Don't beat yourself up for this.
No, it's not that I'm beating myself up, because I know, it was after a particularly difficult behavioral incident, and there was kind of a team meeting happening. And he, I started off, trying to be empathetic and asking him, what's going on for you, and kind of the what's up thing. And the problem was that, after an escalation of a lot of things, he had just walked away from school one day, and with another student. They're 11, 12 years old, so not little children, but definitely not safe for them to be not at school when they're supposed to be. So when we, his parents were quite frantic throughout the day, not knowing where he was, and our school mm-hmm. protocol was activated in terms of missing students, with police looking for them and everything. So when we sat back down together after they'd been found, and the parents were in the room and some of our other school staff, and the student was accusing his parents of not caring about him, and I'd been on the phone with them throughout the day and knew how worried they were, and I got really, really quite angry with him for daring to suggest that his parents didn't care, or that mm-hmm. none of us adults cared about him after all the anxiety and worry that we'd gone through that day. So,
well, I can understand.
Yeah, totally.
That's a day of total fear for you.
Right.
So, goodness. But
Thank you for your honesty. It gives us an opportunity to talk too, Nina. I just want to mention that. That's really nice that you brought that up this publicly and everything. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been running through different scenarios in my head. So scenario one, not scenario one, but one way to approach it, I'm thinking, would be to start off by acknowledging my mistake and trying mm-hmm. to model that you can, because one of the concerns that we have for the student is he has a really hard time taking responsibility for his actions, or even admitting that he did something. So to me, that modeling is important, but I don't know if I necessarily want to start right off with that, or start by, I don't know, I'm at a bit of a loss.
It reminds me, we have a recording of a Plan B conversation from a child who's now in fifth grade, but it's from a first grade. It was when we were doing all of our training with Kim, and we taped this conversation, and it was so similar to a teacher felt like she had really kind of messed up the day before, and it was a different, way different situation than yours, but just that she felt she had kind of installed some fear in him when she didn't want,
right.
She was regretting it. So
right.
in this tape that we were just listening to actually a little bit ago, sending it to the for an article, and she opened up this conversation so honest, just like you're saying, and apologizing and just being honest, like you're saying, and to the child, and being able to say, just the reason, and that she, and it allowed him to then just really open up and share his concerns. So I think that's just one approach that for that moment, it really did that total honesty of, wow, I was just so scared. And sometimes when you're that scared, we all do that. And I don't know.
Yeah.
That was just, it just reminds me of that. That recording,
mm-hmm.
Did allow the other child to really, and children
yeah.
are so forgiving and so understanding, more understanding than.
Yeah. What's hard with this student is that he's pretty closed off. Like, he's one of the few students that I've done some proactive solution conversations with, some Plan B conversations, where you really get stuck on the, I don't know. Or you're presenting your concern, it's like, yeah, okay, fine. And it's really hard to get at what's really the truth. And sometimes I wonder if the student even knows. Like, we know that when we do conversations, and kids often will say, I don't know, sometimes they really don't know. And it's up to us to kind of help them realize what it is that's going on. And I feel like it's a level of skill that it's really stretching my, I haven't done 10,000 Plan B conversations. I don't even know if I've done 1,000, but, but I feel like I'm a bit out of my depth. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, maybe just even you just expressing that feeling that you were feeling and kind of summarizing that meeting, and then that's it for that. It doesn't go into a full Plan B, but just you able to say, wow, this has been bothering me and I wanted to tell you, or.
Yeah, I think being genuine is always, as you know, I'm not saying anything that I don't want to say, accidentally condescending in any way. I was just simply thinking that sometimes when we're scared or nervous, it's hard to be genuine.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's good to get into a space where you can say, I really feel bad, and I would like you to forgive me. And if you can't right now, I understand, but I'm still here to help you.
Yeah.
And then see where it goes from there.
And I'm being totally, I'm just really want to know what you think. Like, do you feel like in some situations with certain kids that going to that, like, I'd like you to forgive me, and if you get, like, it, I'm a bit concerned about giving this student too much power, though.
Well,
like,
I think I want to be
cautious.
I wouldn't even, if you want to leave off the forgive and just say, I'm just letting you know this has been bothering me, and I wish I had said something a little differently. I was just really worried about you. And just,
right.
That's saying how you really feel. And I think that you never know what those words, even he might not show you for a while, but I think when you're able to, when you're modeling that for a child, it might not be even this school year or next, that you see it, but I don't think those are, I think kids hold on to those and never forget words like that.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I think too that sometimes when we make a mistake, it does create a natural vulnerability for us to say to people that we're sorry, because then it puts the emotional ball back in their court, which I think is something.
Well, I am sorry, but what I mean about the power side of it, where, if kids feel like, oh, I can then, and I'm not buying into the idea that the student is, intentionally manipulating, but sometimes kids learn from experience. So, yeah. But I think I know what you mean about you've got to create that, demonstrate. Like, it's modeling. Like, we talk about Plan B conversations is all about modeling and teaching skills through the experience of the conversation. And so I want to do that with this student because I really feel like he has a lot of lagging skills in terms of just his own empathy and his own ability to deal with emotional sensations that there's a lot of work to do, but I feel like I've set it back and I want to try to get it rolling again.
Definitely. Well, I think you will, because that's the scariest feeling to feel, I can't imagine your day that day. So
no.
I you can absolutely get that back.
And it's one thing to tell kids, when you're a parent, you'll understand how scary this is.
Exactly.
He's like, I'm 11. I don't really care.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's my question, is I think it's fine to say you're sorry to a kid. And I don't think that gives the kid power. I think that's you letting the kid know that you feel like you weren't at your best, and you're acknowledging that.
Right.
But, and I think that's all well and good, but I don't think that's going to be your main ingredient. Not that you're saying that it is, but I don't think that's going to be your main ingredient, because what I'm still hearing through all of the fog is this kid is still not communicating very well about what's going on in there. Mm-hmm. We still need to see the kid through the prism of lagging skills so that we have the big picture. We still need to get the conversation going with a specific unsolved problem rather than on something really global. Otherwise, we will make it harder for the kid to reveal himself. And I think your best, moving forward, your best hope is to be able to say at some point, I feel like I know him pretty well now.
Mm.
That's your best.
Right.
Because your apology is not going to do that for you. Once again, I think the apology is great, but an apology is not going to help you know him better.
Right.
So if you asked me two words I was thinking this, it's a little complicated because he hasn't been very forthcoming, but if you asked me the two words that I think are going to give me the greatest optimism that we know him well and that we're going to be able to make headway on the unsolved problems that had you and him conducting yourselves in ways that neither of you feels good about, the two words are empathy step.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get to know this kid. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of surprises left and a lot of bad moments left, and it's in bad moments that people do things that they aren't proud of.
Right.
So, you know, I get it.
I'm definitely going to have my cheat sheet in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
That's a great idea.
But
great
I
idea.
Think that don't underestimate the importance of starting with a very specific, not global, unsolved problem. Because even though you want to talk with this student about everything, the way you get there is by talking with the student about something very specific.
Mm-hmm.
That's what helps open the gate.
Right.
Start too global, the gate often stays closed. Start specific, the gate opens and you get a lot of what you were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two words to lend to the discussion. Empathy, step.
Empathy and step. Well, you know what's interesting is after this incident where they weren't at school, his parents came by and dropped off apology letters that he had written for myself and for the teacher. And he has a closer relationship with his teacher. His teacher is the type of teacher who really gets kids. So it's interesting because the letter that he wrote me was much more formal and seemed, more like, oh, my parents made me write a letter. The one for his teacher was more conversational in tone, so that made me feel like it was more genuine. But for both of us, he said, if you ask me why I did what I did, I just really don't know. And I can't say. And so that's why I'm wondering, like, maybe he just doesn't really know that self-awareness or that ability to analyze his own feelings and actions is definitely a skill that he's struggling with. So we are going to sit down and do a really detailed ALSEP, the teacher and I, this week before he comes back. And I think I'm going to really pay attention to making sure we get a very, 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 very specific unsolved problem that we're going to prioritize to start with to help us get through. We still have 2 months of school, so want to try and make it as productive for everyone as we can.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
As you were saying, he doesn't know why he did what he did. I find that when we talk with kids about what they did, the anticipated response is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. But
that's the anticipated
response. What they were thinking or what they were feeling.
Or if we're asking them about the unsolved problem that caused them to do what they did,
right.
then you're going to hear a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Right, if we know what that is. If we know what that is. Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. I know we haven't left much time for email, but it's like Carol's email today.
That's okay. They'll, you know what?
Thank you.
They tend to keep. But here we go. This is relevant. All right, should we turn our attention to one or two of these?
Sure.
Yes, please. Sure.
Here we go. This one says, hi. Can you give me a little bit more detail about how to carry out emergency plan B? For some reason, I seem to be a bit hazy about how it works. I am a primary music teacher and see each class for half an hour a week. The time constraints in a half-hour lesson and starting at a new school and meeting new behaviors mean I need to be a little bit more ready for the sudden appearance of behaviors needing plan B. I have started using CPS in the last couple of months. I have read The Explosive Child and Lost at School. Thanks for your help. What do y'all think? Is this, this is a question about emergency plan B, but could also be a question about something else. Anybody want to take this one on?
I think maybe they could work with somebody to help them do some proactive plan B where it, you know, can narrow down or start with a student that's displaying some challenging behavior that they could partner up with a teacher or an administrator or a counselor to find some time. I know special schedules are very crazy and that half-hour turnover is so difficult, but maybe somebody could give them some release time to start with one child for some proactive plan B.
Anybody else?
I'm curious. I mean, in my experience, children who are having difficulties in one context in school may also be having similar difficulties in other contexts. So whether the classroom teacher or in the lunchroom or during PE or is the student experiencing difficulties in other venues, and I think that needs to be kind of tying into what Nina is saying, needing to connect with the classroom teachers to see what is going on for these students and providing some information in doing the ALSUP whether it's within just the music class or whether it's across different times of the day.
Yeah, I think it is so easy. It's so important to include all the adults that are working with the kids, and I think sometimes due to time, specialists can get kind of left out, which I know, you know, I can do too, and I, including special teachers in, you know, some sort of team meeting or including them in LSIP meetings is just so valuable. They have so much insight, and I think we forget about that sometimes because they do have such a hard schedule, but it's so important. They have such an important voice where they see everybody in the whole school, and special teachers just have so much to add.
I think that the biggest thing is it goes back to being, you know, collaborative and proactive solutions. So if you can start to track data about when these emergency plan B situations are occurring, and then you look at if there were any pre-existing circumstances, any themes, it might help you to choose to prioritize on the ALSUP, because it's really important. I did learn one thing from a behavior analyst that I worked with that I thought was really helpful. And Ross, I'm assuming this is just obvious to you and your background, but it was good for me to think about what happened 30 seconds before the event, what happened a minute, what happened a minute and a half, what happened 2 minutes. And there may not be a theme in there, but it's just worth taking a look at. And I do think if you start to see trends, the biggest trend that I see on a typical scale, K to 12, is transitions.
Right.
You see kids go into sixth grade and have six different teachers or four or five different teachers every day from fifth grade, And all of a sudden, transitions are a problem, and they weren't a problem before. Well, they had the same teacher all day, and they walked to specials with their class. So there might be hidden unsolved problems that aren't really, like, bubbling to the surface, that all of a sudden bubble to the surface. I do think that thinking that way is really important for middle school administrators and guidance counselors to recognize, in teachers, all staff, that as kids leave elementary school and go to a middle school schedule, the bump might cause some things to come up with having different teachers and transitions. And again, between 8th and 9th grade, and again between 11th and 12th, especially if there are college classes available in 12th grade or 11th grade.
Because they're demanding different skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're demanding different skills that may be lagging but were not as pronounced earlier on in their lives.
Right.
I mean, really, elementary schools that are run well are like little resource rooms. You know, I mean, if you're doing responsive classroom, you have an engaging curriculum, you have developmental awareness, kids are active and engaged all day, and they're learning and growing, and then all of a sudden, here's your planner, move from class to class, it's your responsibility to keep track of it all.
Right.
Exactly.
Off you go.
The only thing I will add to the discussion is that the biggest complaint I hear from specials teachers, art, music,
yeah,
sometimes phys ed, is that they feel that they are completely out of the loop
on
the students in their classes because they are frequently not included in the discussion about those students. And so they feel like they are dealing with these kids blindfolded because they don't know anything about them frequently and haven't been included in the discussion. Makes it extremely hard for them to be proactive.
And if they're not aware of the plan, the solutions, that's even more of a setup. If you're not letting them know what the solutions are to the problems that are working in the classroom to transfer into the specials areas.
I think that's where that editable all sub comes in. But each school, I'm finding, Ross, as we worked on it, they have to set it up on their own. Because then you can see the all sub in the plan.
And share it, yeah, with everyone.
And share it. Yeah, I mean, I made a document and it works. But it was hard for Ross and I to share it to everybody.
Yep.
But that's where the specialists, they get an email that says, hey, this all stuff's been edited, and this is who's working on the plan B for this kid.
That's great.
And that's what needs to happen in schools to help, especially when you have team teaching, like four teachers at a middle school that are working with one child, or even more importantly, at the high school because they're not on teams. A lot of people don't realize that teaming came from a high school that was a progressive high school, and then it was put into middle schools. But teaming would not be a bad idea for some high schools.
Hmm.
That's another whole conversation.
Well, speaking of whole other conversations,
there's
one other email we're going to do. And if you guys don't mind, I'm going to take the first crack at this one because we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah.
But this one's been in the mailbag since November. Well. It says, I would like to hear your views on physical restraint. I am an advisory teacher in the United Kingdom. Yes, we have people all over the world who listen to this program,
mm-hmm.
who advises on support for children in school to avoid exclusion. I completely go along with all the ideas in your two books. However, my colleagues challenge my view that physical restraint should be avoided, as they say it is like a parent holding the child and is somehow therapeutic. I feel this is a dangerous message to school staff who don't seem to need much reason to get hold of children and have at least two adults holding them down. Many thanks. So, you guys okay with me responding?
Oh, yeah.
Physical restraint is not therapeutic. There is no such thing as a therapeutic hold. Most physical restraints are acts of desperation in response to behaviors that are caused by highly predictable, unsolved problems. Is physical restraint needed every once in a blue moon? Yes. But under most circumstances, that's when physical restraint is being used. Not once every blue moon, but in response to behaviors that are caused by highly predictable, unsolved problems. I wish we had time for you three to weigh in, but I wanted to get that in. Maybe I'll save that for further discussion for the beginning of next school year. Would that be good?
I'd love to talk about this.
I would love to as well.
Maybe
good.
Maybe
well,
ask that person because they had to wait for so long. Send them over to the Lost and Found part of Facebook, and we can answer. We can talk more there.
Great. Thank you all for your diligence this year. Talk to you next year.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.